This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Film critic T.T. Stern Enzi says he appreciates the challenge of having his emotional buttons pressed. In his latest essay for WVXU, he writes about movies and a TV show that are uncomfortable to watch but hard to ignore. He and filmmaker Adam Stovall join me now to talk about some of these unsettling on-screen stories and why being uncomfortable isn't necessarily a bad thing. Thanks for being here, T.T. and Adam.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, I think our shared affection for that is a strong foundation for our friendship.
Indeed.
Well, I bet you two are fun at a party then.
I like to think so. Yeah. It's like the David Lynch thing. Everybody says, oh, David's such a wonderful, warm, normal guy when you know him because he gets it all out in his art.
Yeah, there you go.
We go be manipulated for a couple hours and then we can be around people.
There you go. That's one way to deal with it. Okay, I'm going to be honest with you, TT. This is the first time I've gotten a sneak peek your essay. I've read what you had to say about these movies that I haven't seen. I've thought, nope, not watching that one. And before we get into some of these titles, I want to ask each of you, I'll start with you, TT, what you make of the role of these disturbing, uncomfortable characters and storylines in movies? I mean, what role do they play in the storytelling and in, you know, just these productions?
Well, I mean, I feel like at certain times, some of the stories and the filmmakers are banking on the idea that they're taking someone that you don't necessarily want to spend time with and then trying to figure out a way to maybe not humanize them, but have you at least understand them a little better. And then in doing that, you start to lower your barriers a little bit about the idea of potentially how repugnant or creepy or disturbing this person is, to be able to say, wait a minute, I still don't want to be around them, but I get them a little bit.
Yeah.
And that opens the door a little for us.
Yeah. What do you think, Adam?
Oh, I mean, it kind of goes back to the Roger Ebert quote about film being a machine for empathy. One of the best things art can do is help you understand someone who is not yourself. Everyone's going through a journey or a struggle that we know nothing about. Art and film, just being the mode of art that we're discussing here, is maybe the best way of really putting you in someone else's shoes because it allows you to live their lived experience. Like Lars von Trier is a director that I have a deep love for, and it's because he made me feel physical pain watching a movie of his. And I thought, and I mean, people around me are losing their minds. And I just thought, this is just sound and image, but you're making me feel like my stomach is really tight right now. And it's easy to want the like Spielberg looking up in awe, you know, or the Nancy Myers, we get together at the end, but life is so much richer than that. And I think art has a responsibility to really represent all of what life is, and sometimes it is empathizing with a person who's empathizing with a villain or who you think is a villain and at least trying to understand where they're coming from.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that because there is a lot in the world that's uncomfortable right now. I think it's
very true.
I think it's fair to say. So, TT, make a little bit more of the argument about why we need to see uncomfortable, kind of unsettling things on the screen when we're just surrounded by it in our everyday lives.
Well, I mean, I think the stakes are different. So, for instance, yes, if it is the difficult and uncomfortable that we have to deal with in our lives, our families, our work situations, what have you, we can't unplug from that in the same way. We have to deal with those personalities. Whereas on screen, you have that moment where you can, if you want to, unplug. But I think the challenge is, and I think, again, for the most talented filmmakers, they're able to get you to the point of being able to say, well, wait a minute, I am feeling very uncomfortable here, but I don't want to unplug. I want to stay in this moment. I want to understand it. I want to understand my reaction to it, which we don't always think about that aspect of things when it's directly related to our lives and our lived experiences.
Hmm. Adam, do you think that's important, kind of trying to understand your reaction to these films?
Oh, yes. The last few years of my life have been a lot of like this big journey towards self-discovery and reconnecting with and there's so many times where I find myself reflecting on a situation thinking, why did I react that way? Or why was this the feeling that I kind of left with? A friend of mine said, you know, when he was, I didn't go to college, but when he did, he said it was a safe space to fail. You know, he could figure out what he wanted to do, and college creates the sandbox. And I think art and film do the same thing. It's a safe space to feel. Hmm. It's a safe space to, oh, okay, like, I'm really attracted to that person, and typically I'm not, so why? I do not ever want to see that person again, and everyone else loves him, so why can't I stand him? Like, I think it's great, you know, and I mean, film, yeah, we also need movies that you can fold laundry to and, you know, put on the TV for the kid, that's the 47th time, but, like, you also need to sit down and really confront parts of our nature that we might not want to spend a lot of time thinking about, but is still there. And the fact that it's there means that it should be kind of taken out into the light, because that's where, what is it, evil thrives in darkness? You know, if we're not looking at these parts of ourselves, I think that's how you, a lot of people let their lesser angels kind of define them, is because they won't acknowledge it and just say, like, okay, I see you, and you need to stay where you are. It's the Babadook. You keep the Babadook in the seat in the basement, you know? You know, and some days it's a hard day and some days it's not, but the Babadook is there, and you gotta feed it and take care of it, because if you try to ignore it, it's just gonna come up and try to drive you and your kid crazy.
Wow. That's a heck of a way of putting it. Okay, TT, let's talk about some of these titles that are in your essay. I want to start with Mother. I saw this movie shortly after it came out. I hope we can still be friends after this, because I had no idea what this story was supposed to be until I read some of the reviews and stuff to prepare for this conversation. So there are other people who haven't seen it. Try, if you can, explain the premise of this movie and why it made this list for you.
15 seconds, go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start with the easiest and obvious way of talking about it, which is, again, yes, it's a story of a couple who are kind of in their retreat home, if you will, looking for time away. The husband, played by Javier Bardem, is an artist and is stuck in a way. And wanted that time to kind of unplug or whatever. But then people start coming in. And I will leave it at that, because it's the people coming in. The more people who come in and the more that they might want or think that they want, or the impression of how, again, Javier Bardem and his wife, Jennifer Lawrence, how they perceive these people coming in and what it all means, it changes over the course of the film.
Yeah.
And I think I was drawn to this because, again, as a writer who cherishes his creative space, that's a really great entry point to kind of uncovering sort of the madness within the head of an artistic person.
Yeah, and I totally I write too, but I totally related to Jennifer Lawrence, because these people just keep showing up at her house, and they are not always pleasant, and it just gets weirder and weirder. Adam, what do you think makes this film so disconcerting? Or did you think it was? Maybe you didn't think it was. Maybe you're folding laundry to Mother. I don't know.
No. Yeah. It's funny, actually. Mother is the movie that TT and I were talking about that led to this, because I was telling the story of my friends Brian and Jen going to see it, and Jen leaving at a certain point and going throwing up, and Brian saying, I'm so sorry. She's like, no, that's amazing, and we have to finish that movie, just not right now. But he had owned a small business here in the city, and she said, I have felt more seen by this movie than I ever have before. Like, that's what it was like when we would go to these events for your company. It's like, that's exactly how it felt. Like, so they own the Blu-ray. They haven't finished it yet. It is a bit much. I remember calling my mom, because I was like, this is a Jennifer Lawrence movie. Mom's going to want to see it. Spoiler alert, Mom, they eat a redacted. Like, okay. And I was like, oh, yes, I will be skipping this movie. I mean, I think a big reason why it's so disconcerting for audiences is that it's a religious allegory that by a guy who thinks that religion is not unto itself. You know, if you look at Noah and everything, like, this is a Darren Aronofsky's long had his fascinations with religion. And that's still a very difficult thing for people to talk about, you know, especially when it's, you know, Jennifer Lawrence is a big movie star. Javier Bardem is a big movie star. Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer and Donald Gleason and all these people are coming in. That, like, you can imagine a, like, frothy family comedy with these people, or like the Family Stone or something. And so I think it's disconcerting because it's a movie that doesn't quite honor the expectations that audiences are bringing to it. But doesn't that just tie it closer to Mother, the title character, who is having all these people enter her home with rampant entitlements and has no idea how to deal with it, but feels like she has to?
Yep.
And yeah, I think it's just, it hits enough notes that we don't really know how to let commingle, and does it in a way that, I mean, Jennifer Lawrence's performance in that movie is just astonishing. She's on a tightrope with no net. If she ever breaks for a moment, it's done. And she doesn't. And she's like, man, I mean, it's amazing. But I think that's why it's disconcerting, is because it's not what anyone signed up for. Except for those of us who are there opening weekend for a new Darren Aronofsky movie. I'm there with my laundry, folding, yeah. And into it.
Yeah, the religious allegory part, I was totally lost. It made me, after I read all this, I was like, yeah, I didn't spend enough time in Sunday school or something, because I just missed all of that. Let's talk about Uncut Gems. This stars Adam Sandler, who we mostly know from these funny comedic romps and silly stuff. That's not this movie at all. Yeah. T.D., explain the premise and talk about why this was on your list.
Yeah, well, again, I think you set it up really perfectly. It's Adam Sandler, and I have a real affinity for the non-broad comedic roles of Adam Sandler. This and Punch Drunk Love, which again, Punch Drunk Love in some ways could have been on this list too. It's uncomfortable, like spending time with Adam Sandler when he's not making poop jokes.
Yeah. <It's>, that astronaut movie that just came out, what was that called? Where he's an astronaut.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah. He's again, you go in with certain expectations for him, and in this case, he's playing a jeweler who is, you know, a big gambler and runs around a mile a minute trying to keep all of the dishes and things spinning at top speed in every aspect of his life. He's got a, you know, wife and kids and a mistress and all of these elements that he has to sort of figure out. And yet, you know, and you can feel in every single scene, the walls are closing in, you know, the barbarians are literally at the gate waiting to chop him into pieces if they aren't able to get what they want from him. And I was fascinated, just fascinated by the idea of this, again, what he had to turn himself into. This was not a funny, I mean, there are weirdly some hilarious moments in the film, but it is not the kind of funny that we expect from him. It is dark and disturbing. And honestly, I feel like we need a little bit more of that.
Really? Why?
I really do. I feel like that sometimes, especially with humor, that the ability to be able to laugh at somewhat grotesque situations, there's a release in that. If we can tap into that, or a filmmaker can help us tap into that and let some of it go, maybe that's letting some of that darkness in our own heads and hearts out too.
Mm. Do you think that's the same thing as gallows humor?
No, I don't actually.
Yeah,
I don't.
Because that's what leapt to mind, but the more you went in, the less it sounded like gallows humor.
Yeah.
Even though they share some DNA, but I hadn't really thought about that before.
Yeah, no, there's, I understand and appreciate gallows humor in a different way, in that I've had jobs where, you know, I've worked with dead bodies in hospitals and been around people who definitely let you know that the only way that you could maybe handle those situations was to be able to laugh and to lean into those. But that's a different experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you have to be living this terrible thing and you have to laugh at it so you can just get through it.
Right. This, but what I'm talking about with Uncut Gems is a very different kind of experience. I'm kind of curious to hear what you think about Uncut Gems.
Because gallows humor, you're laughing in the face of death. And with something like Uncut Gems, it's truly a portrait of a life I don't understand. Like, there's no part of me that's a gambler. And that's just from living as a very poor person for a very long time. I don't have money to give away. So, like, no, thank you. But, you know, you watch Uncut Gems a few times, which I did just because, like, the first time I watched it, I was like, this is a marvel of filmmaking, and I don't understand how you did it. But also, like, I'm way too much of a mess right now to even really get into it. So I'm going to have to see this again just to appreciate you know, I think it was the third time when I really appreciated the fact that we do begin in his rectum, you know.
We do.
But yeah. Yeah, like, oh, that's apt. Yeah. But it's going back to what we were talking about before. Here, you know, take Howard Ratner as this real person. You know, what, like, when that guy wakes up, what does the world feel like to him? Because if he is keeping all of these plates spinning and just trying to get them spinning as quickly as they can, he knows at least some are going to fall. But is his experience of life such that the falling is the inevitable and he's trying to see if he can get one to stay? And if that's the case, well, what happens to a person that makes them feel like, if I can keep one plate up, because, like, plates are for crashing, mm-hmm. you know, and if it's living in capitalism, if it's, you know, whatever it is, you know, you look at how he treats people and how people treat him in return. And just like, yeah, I want to know what it feels like to be that person. Like, what does it feel like to get dressed in the morning? What are you battling with as you, like, when you make your coffee? Like, what's the thing you're trying not to think about? And I think the Safdie brothers, oh, by the way, Mother is streaming on Amazon Prime and Uncut Gems is streaming on Netflix if people at home want to check these titles out. The Safdie brothers are so good, along with Good Time, of taking this character that none of us would want to be and saying, yeah, but, like, this is what it's like to be them.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the newer titles that are in your essay, starting just briefly with The Bear. TT, I want you to tell us that story a little bit and then tell us if you think it's even good. I mean, it's gotten a lot of critical acclaim, but there are some people who are like, eh.
You know, I feel like The Bear, this is a great transition, by the way, too, because I feel like The Bear and Uncut Gems in my mind occupy similar kinds of spaces. You were talking about a chaotic life in the case of Uncut Gems, whereas in The Bear, you're talking about a chaotic situation. You know, you have Carmi, who's played by Jeremy Allen White, comes into his brother's restaurant. It's a family restaurant, sandwich shop. Chaotic, crazy, constant talking, movement, you know, this barrage of overstimulation that is just attacking you in every single moment. And yeah, it's how do you figure out, is this, I mean, we all know that restaurants can be like that. But again, I think that the genius of the show is it is constantly reminding you of that at every single turn. It's, again, all of the plates that are spanning, all the plates that are breaking, all the places that you're stepping on after they've broken, and it's all still there and it never gets cleaned up and you're forced to deal with it. And I think your question is really interesting in that now we're three seasons in and there are always moments where they take you out of that to give you a chance to kind of resettle yourself before they push you right back into it. But they always push you right back into it. And I think that's the challenge for audiences. And I will speak for my wife in this case, who's not here, she has continued to watch the show with me despite the fact that she hates it. Because she can't handle the overstimulation. She's like, why would anyone want to do this? And yet, she continues to, we cannot binge watch the show. She can't watch more than an episode at a time. But she gives me that one episode, we sit, we watch it, and she is on edge after it's over. So her question is your question. Like, why are we watching this? Why do people think this is good? I think it's good because, again, as I've said before, this is the mirror that we get to hold up to ourselves without actually having to live in it.
this might say more about Jessica's love for you than it does about the show.
I think it totally does. Okay. And I hope she's listening and will hear me say that once again, I love her dearly for putting up with me in these kinds of moments.
Well, there are so many more titles in your essay. We didn't even get to Kinds of Kindness and Poor Things. I want to ask you, Adam, how difficult is it to get the green light to tell stories like this? I mean, this is not the Marvel Cinematic Universe we're talking about. These are not going to be big box office kind of draws. How tough is it as a filmmaker to get somebody to finance a movie that's out to disturb people?
It is immensely difficult. You know, in, I mean, with the Safdie brothers, I know they had been working on Uncut Gems for, I think, 10 years. It was based on, I think, a guy their father knew and that they'd kind of grown up around. But I don't know Christopher Storer's story with the bear, so I don't know how long he'd been working on that. For my own experience, you know, I made a movie called A Ghost Waits that touches on a lot of mental health and suicidal ideation and stuff like that. The way that we did it was we made it for almost no money. Production was $30,000, I think, all told. We spent $44,000. But at that level, there were no notes on the script, basically. Like, the people that were investing were just like, I hope this is a thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, if I had been going after money, if I'd been going after a company that had been had done this for a while, the ending of A Ghost Waits is one of the first things that would change. So it's not impossible, which it can definitely feel like, but it's understanding the responsibility to the audience and the scope of the audience. If I can give advice to a filmmaker who wants to do this, underestimate your audience. It'll keep you sane, and it feels like a surprise when it's bigger.
Well, I've been talking with film critic T.T. Stern-Enzi and filmmaker Adam Stovall. You can find T.T.'s latest essay on our website, wbxu.org. Thank you both for your time today.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WBXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.